We come to Sri Yukteswar every year, for those of you who followed this before, when the light is just like this, where the sunlight is now gone, but we can still see each other. It hasn't quite turned into night. But as the sunlight diminishes, the candles increase, and even the lights that were there in some of those shrines or things that are reflective that we didn't notice before, now that the daylight is fading, we're becoming aware of all kinds of more subtle kinds of light, which of course is too obvious in an image for us not to see it, also on so many other levels. You know, the extraordinary question is how God can be so present and we can be so ignorant. It's just because we're busy doing something else. We're busy organizing our self-concerns and pursuing them, which is really actually what we came here to do. We're impelled by our karma. It's not like we really are making many choices. We have this impression that we're making choices, but it's our karma that's always impelling us, just piece by piece. And much of Yogananda's life, he talks about in terms of his profound longing for God and his equally profound longing for the guru who is going to take him to God realization. So an extraordinary theme throughout, well, autobiography, and really throughout the entire life of Yogananda, is the guru-disciple relationship. And that is the first line of autobiography of a yogi. The characteristic feature of Indian culture has always been the search for eternal verities and the concomitant disciple-guru relationship. And it's just the first sentence of that book that was destined and is destined to change the planet. It helped launch and continues to inspire a total spiritual revolution. It's really astonishing once you move out of the traditional denominational religions, East and West, how many people have read that book. And whether they ever looked at it again, they will say, it shifted me. It woke me up to something possible. And the first sentence of it, eternal truth and the teacher who will help us to realize it. Now, it's a very odd combination in a certain sense to talk about self-realization with this tremendous emphasis, even as I said at the beginning, that we can experience God in our own nervous system, and yet concomitant, equal with it, one demands the other, is that we also have this relationship of absolute trust and receptivity to the one who knows and who knows us and knows how to take us there. So we all, of course, those of us who are devoted to Yogananda and all the millions and millions of others who are, we see him as so all-powerful and the source of everything, and rightly so. It's not inappropriate to feel that way. But Master himself did not present himself that way. Swamiji tells us that Master was subservient to Sri Yukteswar and subservient to Babaji, and often explained what he was doing because it was Babaji's will that it be done that way. And so touchingly in the path, Swami talks about an elderly disciple of Yogananda's who lived on a very small income. And out of devotion to his guru, he gleaned from the fallen crop walnuts from some abandoned orchard, sold the walnuts, used the walnuts to buy yarn, then took the yarn and hooked a rug, small rug, that was a picture of Sri Yukteswar. I mean, just so many steps of focused devotion in that story. And then he gave it to Master, and Master intuitively knew all that had happened to make that happen. And he hung that little rug outside his room at Mount Washington. And every time he went in or out, he would stop to prana. Now, Swamiji knew Master at the very end of his life, when he often talked about how impersonal Master's consciousness was and how freely he would talk about being one with the infinite and beyond all of the realities of this world. And yet, when he would go in and out of his room, he would pranam to his guru, because that's the source of everything. And the paradox between the world transforming power of an avatar like Yogananda, pranaming to a little hooked rug that was made for him because it was an image of Sri Yukteswar. And you go back to Yogananda's young life when he was a young teenager or a middling teenager. And there he was, he'd managed to extricate himself finally from his father's worldly desires for him. He'd escaped 3 attempts to marry him to someone, and he refused to accept any of them. He was making his own life in his own way, but he longed for this relationship. And then magically, or you would say divine majesty, majestic is probably a better word than magic. He's in the crowded streets of Varanasi, and at the end of a lane, he sees him. And at first, he just is startled, and he just moves past, and then he finds that his feet won't move. He can't walk away, but if he turns around and walks toward, then he has all the energy there is. Now, even that, isn't that a beautiful just symbol of all of it? We turn and try to walk away, and we stumble. We have no power. We can't move the way we're trying to move, but we turn to walk toward. We walk toward that power which is going to enlighten us. And all of a sudden, this force draws. So, Master, goes and falls at the feet of Sri Yukteswar, and they have this extraordinarily emotional reunion, just recognition. And Master Sri Yukteswar, makes comments about as their meeting progresses, inasmuch as you are unhappily situated at the monastery, I suggest you go back to your parents' house. And Master writes in autobiography, it seemed unnecessary to tell Sri Yukteswar anything about the details of my life. There was no context for Sri Yukteswar to know that, except there was every context in the world. It's interesting. Swamiji says that Master made it clear that Babaji was actually his true guru. But Babaji told Sri Yukteswar, I'm going to send you someone to train. And Sri Yukteswar says to Master, many years later, you were the one that Babaji said would come to me. So we have this dance, this cosmic drama. We really literally, all of us, and the images of the ocean are so often used in a spiritual context. I was not so long ago standing on the beach watching the waves, as all of us can do easily from living here. And you think of the most obvious thing. It never stops. And it keeps forming and reforming itself. And it's so much vaster and deeper. And because I've done snorkeling or even a little scuba diving, You realize that what you're seeing on the top is just such a little part of it, and you go just a little bit deeper, and vast universes that you don't even know are there are suddenly revealed to you. And in the spiritual reality, there is this intimate connection. You know, we're talking about something that's so impersonal and so vast, and yet the search for eternal verities demands this intimate relationship, so much more intimate than anything we ever experience, that it makes all human relationships superficial. There's an individual consciousness that knows us more than we can ever know ourselves, and much more than that, knows who we really are and what we will become, and has unshakable faith in our success. And a step even further than that, an absolute commitment to stay with us no matter what until we succeed. Now, when Master found Sri Yukteswar, he realized what he had, and then he tells that wonderful little part there. There ensued a long verbal or silent tussle, because Yogananda said to Sri Yukteswar, "You must bring me to God. Promise me that you will awaken me to God." Now, part of this is lila, divine play, but Yogananda knew that Sri Yukteswar had the power to do it, and he was going to extract from his guru a promise that this would be fulfilled. And there's this long tussle, and finally Sri Yukteswar says, "Be it as you say. What you say will come to pass." And then Yogananda, on our behalf, talks about what an extraordinary, total, forever release of fear and tension went out of him, because now it was settled. There's a God-realized master. He has accepted me. He has promised to bring me to God. What more could I ever ask for? And once again, this is us, isn't it? What more could we ever ask for? Yogananda described his life as a special dispensation. I said to Swamiji, "Does that mean that we actually get a little more than we ought to get? The more than we've earned?" Swami sort of laughed and said, "That seems to be what it means, doesn't it?" No. And Swami describes it in another place, where an area of calm in the turbulency of delusion exists, and by our good karma we're drawn into. And how then do we behave? And this is the story of Sri Yukteswar and Yogananda. How then do we behave to the end of our lives, whenever anything comes to us that reminds us in any way of the great gift of realization that the Master gives to us? We stop everything in front of us. At the end of Swamiji's life, no matter what subject he was supposed to talk about, he would just tell the story of how he found and met Master, was initiated as a disciple. And it was so extraordinary, because that life of enormous accomplishment, the only thing he really wanted to talk about was, "I read autobiography, I went to Master, he initiated me as a disciple. Master stands at the peak of everything that Babaji asked him to do, and there's a little hooked rug that looks like Sri Yukteswar. And Master stops to thank him." And Sri Yukteswar, that's what he stands for. I mean, he is the, you know, everybody's image of what the guru is, just standing there in that divine power compromising not at all, but holding that power out for us if we will receive it.